G7. Number 21A.
Okay, we come today to a completely new subject. After I have tried to introduce the idea of the self-evolution of science, we jolly well have to see what are these laws and therefore think some hours about what is a law, what are the laws, how to use the laws, how to think about laws. I have mentioned that I read recently a book from a French philosopher on his discussion with the astrophysicists and nuclear physicists, and he makes a very interesting conclusion, which I really would like to share with you, because it seems to have such an impact for our work. He said that looking back over the scientific period, way back to the Renaissance, he can see three great periods, so to say, or paradigm shift periods in physics. The very first one was that the scientists were concerned actually in the era of Galilei, of Kepler, of Newton, with the first era mostly concerned with movements, to see and calculate the law of movements, the movements of the Earth around the Earth. He could calculate these movements, and then we know how further on Kepler and Newton were all engaged in the physics of movement. The second period came with the quantum theory, which we have been considering also at the beginning of this century, where the main aspect was to, in quantum theory, namely the law of the changes, to see how change can be put into laws, not so much the process of something from cause to effect, but the law of changes. And so that was the end, really, of that first period, because determinism, which was the main point in the first period, was no more consistent in the second period, so that the dualism of determinism was falling and the law of cause and effect was overcome through the cybernetic laws. Then he feels, and this is the important point, that we are now touching a third period, namely the future. And he begins to speculate, perhaps, on the future, and he talks that the future will be the physics of meaning. Quite something different. The physics of meaning. See, meaning has always been cut out from physics. The subjective aspect has always been cut out. Only objectivity was being considered. So that he speaks about the physics of meaning. He also calls it semantic physics. Semantic means, as perhaps you know, the study or science of meaning in language form. So that we begin to see that not only hard facts of objective objects and movement and powers and motions are under consideration, but also the meaning of the whole universe. So that we have a completely different science in the future in front of us, the study really of the relationship between meanings, between signs and symbols, and they represent, so to say, that new era. Now, if he speaks about the semantic physics or the physics of meaning, then we know that this is really something that concerns Christian science. We don't want to just have an objective universe, but also very much a subjective universe, because we live subjectively, and in that subjective universe, we want to see order, we want to see laws, we want to see harmony, we want to see the equilibrium of being, so that this is really again a sign that sciences are approaching more and more the science of being. When we look at our model of being, then it is really a physics, so to say, or a science of meaning, a science of language. We have there just our 15 root notions, and this is 15 root notions. This is the language that we speak, that we think, with which we are contemplating the universe, with which we are giving a treatment. We are using that laws of meaning, the laws of the language of spirit. So finally we come to the language of spirit, which was perhaps always a bit question mark. What is the language of spirit? It's the language of spirit when we read spiritual things. Is that the language of spirit? If we read the Bible, is that the language of spirit? If we read the textbook, is that the language of spirit? Or what is the language of spirit? And so little by little we approach a better, more concrete, a more defined answer to this question of the letter of spirit. So if we have that language of spirit, naturally we must see it also in its science. It's a science of the language of spirit. Or else we just babble on spiritually without having any science behind it, without having any laws and order and system behind it, so that we must see that that language of spirit must be a very strict language, a language that obeys scientific laws. And so this is the future of our consciousness, that in our consciousness we enter that realm of the science of spiritual meanings, of the science of language. This man says that this language of meaning lies beyond the quantums. So he goes above and beyond the physical universe and says, there is a meaning in the universe, and therefore that meaning must be understood spiritually. Only then when we understand the meaning of that universe, then we can also properly analyze really the universe itself, and that is therefore that which is beyond the quantum. And again we see it touches the meta-realism, metaphysics, divine metaphysics. That's the future field of investigation. This is a language that covers what? That covers what he calls the information network. The information network. That's only another wording than what we would say the model of being. The model of being is actually an information network. It is information because it constitutes of the root notions of reality, those 15 root notions, those three big categories of being. So it is information is there, but it is also an information that is a network, because we have not just written down in that model of being just the 15 root notions, one after the other, but we have given to them a specific place value. Always a place value that would show how categories intertwine with categories, and therefore we have point of intersection which are absolutely definite and which can be calculated spiritually, and they have a spiritual definite value. So it is not just a list of ideas or a list of synonymous terms or of capitalized terms. It is a network, an information network. All what we have to know for our life and for our practice is what we can deduce from that one page, from that model of being. So actually we begin to see that what we have received through the self-evolution of science, namely first the seven, then seeing it in the four, then seeing it in the four by four as a matrix, that alone has given us an information network. Then furthermore, when John Dolly saw a third category of being, the levels, then he could put it into that model of being and gave us an even more complete information network. That's the subject that we want to consider in the next few hours. But I also want to state something which Stephen Hawking, you know Stephen Hawking, I think, very well by now. He's just as famous as at Einstein's time. Einstein was known. He's quite an extraordinary thinker. And he wrote once an essay, and in that essay he said the following: I'm hopeful that we will find a consistent model that describes everything in the universe. Isn't that what we try to see with our model of being? That he says, I have that hope that this will be possible at one time. Though he doesn't know the answer yet, but still he can see towards which aim the development aims at. So he could see there must be a model of which explains everything, so to say, the theory of everything. So if we have a clear understanding, and that needs quite a bit of consciousness culture of the model of being, then we can really say that with that model of being, if we understand it completely, really spiritually, that is really the theory of everything, that everything in the universe and in our life has its answer and within that model of being. Therefore, we cannot regard that model of being too lightly. It is the future, so to say, of our understanding, the future of our research, and therefore we cannot give enough love and time to see what that means. Now, in that model of being, we can see that we have really three big categories intertwined with each other, and that the relationship between the intertwining must be seen. It's not enough just to have a nice chart in front of us, nicely drawn and nicely written, and have the chart in front of us. We must see that which is not written out, that which is not textually said, namely the relationship that exists between those various points of intersection. That is not in that chart definitely, expressly written out. That's something we have to understand, and therefore we must see, we can understand it if we see the laws that rule the relationship from one point of intersection to the next point of intersection. Meaning that if that information chart or network has, so to say, factors, point of intersections, and also relationship with other points of intersection, therefore we have two things that we have to keep in mind: factors and relationship. Now, when we have factors and relationship, then we have the fundamental meaning of a law. A law doesn't say anything else but states how factor or facts are related to other facts, and therefore to define that relationship so that relationship is immovable, that it is eternal, that it's perfect, that it is forever, and is cannot be broken. So that leads to our concept of law. Law is always the underlying element of a science. A science without law is not a science. Science must be expressed through its own laws. If it is not expressed through laws, then it is not a science, then it is a belief, then it is a way of looking at things, but not a science. Therefore, we have to acquaint ourselves in Christian Science with the term law. On the study material on page 11, I have given a few definitions of law. Can you see page 11? Yes. So on page 11, we have some definition on law. These are mostly definitions that you know perhaps from earlier classes that you have taken. More or less they are the same definitions. I just put them here again for reminder. And when one is investigating in the dictionaries what law is, how law is defined, one is naturally surprised to see that not everybody defines law in exactly the same way. That there are different aspects to law, and I have tried to put into some classification the definition of law by taking out the main point of view. I have written that down on the left-hand side in bold letters. The first one is order. We don't need to read these definitions. Some of them you know, and we don't need to go through them, but we just can pinpoint what the law means. It is, in general, it is considered as an invariable order. Order is an old saying. Order is heaven's first law. So we see that the moment we can put facts into such a relationship that they constitute an order, that we have already touched the meaning of law. So if we put the 7 days of creation in an order, and not just in a row, in an order where we can see that it must begin with "let there be light." It cannot begin, and God made man in his image and likeness, where we begin to see that those days of creation are constituting a definite law. What kind of law? We must know what is that law. And we see the days of creation are, so to say, the law of creativity. So whenever we have a creative question to be solved, we go back to the law of creativity. This applies to all our creative activities. Whatever we do, we can really trace back the creative order to the order of the 7 days of creation, to mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. We have been showing that in the earlier classes and lectures and summer schools over and over and over. I don't have to repeat it. They can be understood if you go back to those times. But you can see that we could not, or that it would not make sense if those days of creation would be in another arrangement. The other arrangement would not be a law. It would just be arrangement the way one would like to arrange it, but they would not constitute a law. They only constitute a law when they are in a definite order. So order is invariable, and that invariable order is what we call law. Or we can also have a definition, various definition, where the accent is on process, that a process can be defined through a law, so that we have really the behavior of something that is then becoming a law. So it is a process law, where the behavior is being fixed, so to say, as invariable order, as invariable process. It is describing then what has to happen. Can you see it is much more process, what has to happen, a process in being, or how being is moving, is has a dynamic way of expressing itself. Like, for instance, the four sides of the holy city. You couldn't put those four sides in another order. It's a process order. You can't just start with Christianity in the holy city. It's the third side of the city, because Christianity is already the outcome of something. Therefore, you cannot start with the outcome. You have to start with the beginning, and that is the word. So the word must be the first side of the city. We can't just start, say, it's the holy city with the Christ, namely the divine message from God to men, when we do not know what God is. So the word has to be first that says what God is, and only then we can have a sense of the Christ, which says how the Christ is the message from God to men. Can you see there is always a definite logical spiritual order, even in a process. So process is also shown as a law. Or we have another point in law which is also necessary to see, namely prediction. A law is something where we can predict, so to say, what is the outcome. A predictable consequences of an act. That's a law. So that a law is something very reliable for us. We can rely on a law because it predicts what is the outcome of that law. The outcome is not variable, but is a predictable consequence of the act and of the process. Naturally, the next one is relationship and structure. This is very important for a law. We said a law has, so to say, two main pillars. I may call them pillars, namely facts, and second, relationship between the facts. So relationship is always very important for a law, that it states exactly what the relationship is from fact to fact to fact. So here we have the relationship. And this is interesting, that though in times past, law was perhaps defined through relationship, just relationship, but today, in the last few decades, one can see that science has elaborated that relationship, has expanded that relationship, not just to a relationship of one order, but to a structural relationship. To a structural relationship. What means a structural relationship? It means that it has the possibility to define what is the relationship of various categories of being that are that have order, and so two orders together constitute then the structure. If I may try to illustrate it, I can do it perhaps through music and say, well, in music you have the following thing. In music, for every instrument you have your notes, and you play along the notes in a linear way. The violin will play in a linear way the notes. But That is not structure. That is just a linear law, a linear order. But when there are many instruments which have to play together, then you have for every instrument another order. The flute will play another tone than the violin, or the trumpet will play another tone than the violin or the piano, which shows that various linear orders, when they are put together in a relationship, you get really a structure. That's what is called in music a score. So the conductor of an orchestra, he has to think structurally. He cannot think linearly. That's not enough. That's just a melody which we may whistle. When we whistle, we can only play really linearly and not structurally. But when you have an orchestra where you have various instruments and every instrument's playing in another linear order, then you must have also a relationship between those linear orders. I always call that a vertical relationship instead of a horizontal relationship, also a vertical relationship. And so the conductor will really have to see the whole of all the instruments in one view. He has to think structurally, the score. Is that clear? That's a structure. So the pianist will just have a linear order and law, whereas the director will have a structural consciousness, or must have a structural consciousness of music. He must take in the linear and the vertical relationship. That is what we see in Christian Science, that in that one being that has no beginning and no end, there must not be only linear order, or it would have beginning and end, but it must have structural order which has no beginning and no end. So this is what we try to do, to try first to think linearly as the law of a linear order, of a invariable order, and then lift up consciousness to that point where we can also think structurally. And then we have the new definitions that we get nowadays, saying that law is a structural principle. So bringing it right back to a structural principle. That's a law. The law that we will consider, really, as we go on.